I call the Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Friday, January 18th. Let the record reflect that it is 3:30 p.m. Senators present on the committee are Vice Chair Senator Fred Dyson, Senator Fairclough, Senator Bishop, Senator Michicki, and myself, Chair Senator Giesel. Excused absences today, Senator French and Senator McGuire. And let's see, I don't see any other elected folks in the audience. So welcome. Today on our agenda, we are going to be welcoming DNR Commissioner Daniel Sullivan to the committee with his deputies to present an overview. For folks listening online, the documents are on BASIS, so you can call them up as you're listening. Commissioner, welcome to the testimony table. And I understand that there's a new salutation for you. I think someone said I could call you General.
No. Oh. No. That was my old job.
That was your old job. Oh, okay.
Are you talking the other life?
In your reserve, yes.
Yes. No, and no, nothing close to that.
Oh.
Colonel.
Lieutenant Colonel.
So. Lieutenant Colonel. Very good.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate that. Something else I do on the side.
Yes. In your board moments.
Yes, fair capacity.
In any case, if you would introduce yourself and, you know, as your team comes up. If
yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to introduce myself. It's an honor, first of all, to be here in front of the committee. This is our home committee here. I'm Dan Sullivan, the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. I have with me Joe Balash, who's the Deputy Commissioner, and Ed Fogles, who's the other deputy. I'm likely to have them come on up, if that's okay, when all the hard questions start coming my way, because they know quite a lot about what's going on. But what I wanted to do this afternoon, and we have the PowerPoints and everything, we forgot our thumb drive, so we're kind of quickly trying to go locate that, but I'll walk you through. The goal of today, and we appreciate the opportunity, is to have an overview. First, really, just a little bit on DNR. Obviously, most of the members here are quite familiar with what we do. And I think we're going to be testifying on Monday as well.
Yes.
So we plan on doing Monday, both in front of Senate Resources and House Resources, is our overview testimony. Is introducing the whole team here, so not only the deputies, but all the directors. And so we wanted to do that. That's really one of the goals, introduce really literally kind of faces to names. I know that different senators have different interests with regard to the many different areas of responsibility for DNR. And then so I'll do that very quickly here, even though the team's not here. They'll be here Monday, so we'll do that introduction component on Monday. And then what I really wanted to do was a quick year in review, really since to update the committee since the legislature was last in session, and to give you a sense, and you'll see it, I won't go through each element. We have quite a big PowerPoint for you to go through this presentation, but not only with regard to division by division, I'll point out a couple highlights, but also a year in review on some of the bigger issues that we know are of interest to the committee here. And then briefly touch on the year ahead as we move through and begin this legislative session working closely with you. So I just also wanted to mention at the outset with regard to the team here, one of the things that we've been trying to do certainly in the last couple of years is make sure that the DNR team, commissioner on down, responsive, respectful, looking at working very, very closely with the legislature. So that's another reason why we want to have the whole team here on Monday. You can meet them, and if there's specific questions, what they're going to be doing is going out, meeting with different members of the legislature over the course of the next couple of days on Monday and Tuesday. So that's pretty much the broad overview. I apologize for not having anything with regard to these PowerPoint slides. We'll probably get something here in a minute, but A lot of you have seen some of these materials before, I'm sure. Some haven't. And I guess with regard to one of the messages that I want to leave with this committee in terms of an overview is a sense of optimism. So we certainly know we have challenges. We have challenges throughout the state, but we also have, we believe, tremendous opportunities. And we have a strong sense of optimism with regard to some of the things that happened last year. It's not false optimism. We know we have challenges throughout the state. But unlike most states, unlike most countries, we have the resources and the resource wealth to address these challenges. And so that's certainly a theme that I want to leave with this committee as we start the overview. So with that introduction, Madam Chair, what I was intended to do was go through this PowerPoint presentation. And again, I apologize for other viewers that it's not going to be on the screen, at least for a little bit. But if you can, there's a little numbers on the bottom of the right-hand corner of each of the slides, and I'll just refer to those. And essentially what we're going to do is try and walk through these pretty quickly, give an overview, and then certainly be willing to answer some Q's and A's. Or if you prefer, just as we're going through, more of a conversation, if you have questions regarding anything to make it less, you know, one-directional, we certainly would be interested in kind of having a conversation. If you have questions on the slides, be glad to answer them, or Ed or Joe can come on up and help.
That'd be great if committee members could ask you at the time.
Yeah.
Sometimes that burning question.
I think 60-page PowerPoint might be a little much to bear on a Friday afternoon. So anyways, what we wanted to do, if you look at slide two, really three parts to this. As I mentioned, just an introduction. A lot of this will be review. Looking back on 2012, where we think on some key areas where we think there was a number of areas where we made progress. And then just touching on, because I know we're going to be in front of this committee quite a lot, some of the key issues we see with regard to the legislative session and beyond. So if that sounds good, we'll kick into it. So again, I always like to start, if you look at slides 4, 5, and 6, just the overview. When people say, hey, what do we have, what do we manage, and I know many of you have seen these slides, I apologize if it's too much review, but it is always amazing to take a look at these numbers, remember what they are. You know, we've had a little bit of fun on that slide 4. You see there, one of the themes you're going to see are we've been out promoting the state, we've been out working interest in the state's resources, literally not only in the country but all over the world. And you know, that land base bullet, and down in Texas, you can imagine we have a lot of fun with that. I have everybody who's born in Texas stand up, and then I have them read that bullet, and they typically don't laugh the way Alaskans laugh on it. But so huge land base, obviously something that's critical to us. You look at that other the other slide there, this mix of federal, state, and native land. But even in the state land area, the amount of land that we're managing is enormous. You turn to slide 5, and again, what I want to offer to the committee is to make sure we have the opportunity, if the committee's interested, in having really the DNR experts, the geologists, our reservoir engineers, come and brief this committee much more detail on these numbers. But these are estimates with regard to oil and gas, conventional. They're huge. And we have one of the top teams of geologists in the country that can come and give a lot more detail to this committee. In many ways, these are the critical issues, right? In some ways, on the tax debate, this is the threshold issue. We still think we have resources that can support us for decades. That's going to, we think, affect policy. And as you can see from these numbers, we do. Two things just to point out on this slide. The unconventional resources, we're just scratching the surface on. We think we have an enormous amount. And we can give this committee a lot more detail on a very positive one example, methane hydrate testing that was done on the North Slope, Conoco, Department of Energy, that had very positive results. We cracked the code on that. It's gas, you know, for centuries. And then, secondly, just how relatively unexplored Alaska remains. And that's just a comparison. One comparison we have there is to Wyoming, another hydrocarbon basin about the size of the North Slope. You look at the number of exploration wells in Wyoming compared to Alaska on the North Slope. In Texas, that number is about 250,000. As you see on the slide there, it's about 500 in Alaska. And then very quickly, similarly with regard to resources in terms of minerals, also enormous potential. We had our team take a look. If Alaska were its own country, where with regard to estimates, we think that we would rank with regard to certain critical minerals. And you see on the minerals listed on this slide, the estimates are we'd be in the top 10 of these minerals in the world if we were our own country. So enormous potential there. So what I'm going to do here, and again, I apologize, we don't have the directors here, but just very quickly give a sense of the different elements of DNR that we have. If you look at slide 7, it lists the Division of Agriculture, Division of Forestry. We've made a lot of progress on the Alaska Grown issues, and again, we would welcome the chance to brief this committee on the governor's Timber Jobs Task Force, which we think has a lot of potential. Some of the activity we hope to see during this session relates to that. So those are two important divisions. Geological Survey, that's our equivalent of the U.S. Geological Survey. We think it's probably second only to the USGS in the country. Great team. They've been doing fantastic work. One of the things listed there is their statewide assessment that they've second year into a three-year program, have great cooperation from the legislature on that, getting out, finding different minerals where they are. We had teams out all throughout the state this past summer.
Commissioner, could I ask you a question? Sure. On that slide? You mentioned here the Geologic Materials Center.
Mm-hmm.
That we appropriated some money for building,
yeah,
something respectable.
Right.
How's that progressing?
You know what? Is it okay to have Joe give you a little?
Of course. Of course. If you'd introduce yourself, Joe.
Thank you, Senator. For the record, my name is Joe Balash, Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Natural Resources. And the Geologic Materials Center is an asset of the Division of Geologic Geophysical Survey. It is in Eagle River. And it is an astounding collection of samples of rocks and core from all around the state and even in parts that technically are outside our boundaries in the federal OCS. The facility there at one time was a fish hatchery and a couple of residential buildings right around that facility. It is well beyond its capacity. They're storing numerous samples in connexes, which have no temperature control, which is leading to the degradation of those materials that once lost can't be replaced in some instances. So a number of years ago, we began to look at the potential for a new facility, one that would be able to handle not only the current collection, but an expanding collection. In fact, as the mineral owner, we have a tremendous stake in collecting samples when companies, be they oil and gas or mining companies, explore our lands. And we are not able to collect what we probably should because we don't have a safe place to put them. The funds that were appropriated in years past have been used to identify the needs that we have today and into the future, and looked at a variety of options to provide a facility. And we, just before the governor's budget was released in December, became aware of a facility that is hopefully for sale in East Anchorage that would provide an adequate place to store the materials themselves, as well as provide a window into what it is resource development can do for this state, what it does for this state, and we think is going to be a tremendous asset going forward. In the governor's budget, there is a $15 million item in the Department of Administration's budget, and so here I am from DNR
promoting, huh?
Promoting another agency's budget request. would be happy to provide the committee with specific details if and when we're able to secure a purchase agreement with the owners of the building.
Great. Thank you very much.
Well, I just, Madam Chair, also just to mention the, you know, if you have it, for any of the centers who haven't been out there, we would welcome the chance to give you a tour. In many ways, it really is the history of Alaska. And what's so interesting about it, even now, although the facility is in a bit of a rough shape, you still have industry representatives that come out there that in many ways are looking ultimately to make investment decisions on what they're looking at in terms of the core. So if you look at one of the accomplishments under the under this slide, if you look at the second to last bullet on the right, they're hosted 507 visits from industry and academia in the past year. So that is quite a lot. And we get a lot of busy traffic out there, so it serves a very useful purpose. So continuing on, our Mining, Land, and Water Division, which in many ways...
Excuse me.
Yes, Senator Dyson.
You guys are too quick.
We've got a big power. We've got a big slide pack, yeah. Senator.
So just quickly on natural gas liquids. Traditionally in the industry, the liquids are not... utilized close to the source, it's near where the ultimate customers are. And I assume that may be changing. Is there, do you have any feel for the business case that might make it profitable for the industry to use our liquids close to where they're produced? That may be out of your ken, and it's fine.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Dyson. I think that one thing that's worth bearing in mind is that the natural gas liquids at Prudhoe Bay in particular have been harvested or captured for many years now and transported through TAPS. And so the quality, the MMBTU quality of the Prudhoe Bay gas today is not what it once was. And because those liquids have been stripped and when the gas is re-injected down into the reservoir itself. So in terms of other uses for the NGLs in particular and those that remain part of the production stream, those continue to be looked at as an essential component for what we hope will be in massive LNG project. But, you know, there are additional uses and functions that those liquids can serve, and I think that that'll be an excellent topic for us to delve into with the assistance of the Division of Oil and Gas, who has a little bit more expertise than I do.
Okay, and thank
follow
you.
Follow up, Senator Dyson?
On a different question here, Commissioner, you didn't mention the rare earth metals specifically. And I understand we have a significant population, and you're in a good position to comment on what that means vis-a-vis international geopolitics.
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, one of the things that we'll get to in the slides is the strategic and critical minerals work that we've done over the past year. And it's been a big one of the big highlights, certainly, that we think is moving forward quite well. But on this slide, as part of the statewide assessment, the state has actually the DGGS group has been actually out looking for different occurrences. So you see this slide that I mentioned earlier shows some of the estimates with regard to strategic and critical minerals. There's the rare earth elements. The USGS Alaska has over 70 occurrences. That number is actually higher, likely, because of our own team of geologists that's been out there over the last 2 years. I can get you a they put the reports out periodically, right, and they make them public. for the whole purpose of getting industry and explorers interested. And there was one that was announced in the middle of the summer that we can get you the Petroleum News article on it, but it had a lot of promising results from their work, both with regard to rare earth elements and also with regard to gold. And this was more in the interior parts of Alaska. So,
and isn't something going on at Bokar Mountain or whatever it's called?
Bokan Mountain.
Bokan Mountain, a little south of here?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
So, as I mentioned, mining, land, and water, in many ways, that's the heart and soul of DNR, biggest division, and focus on a number of areas. The one thing that, and again, we'll talk about this in a little bit more detail, but we have had this issue the last 2 years of our backlog of permits. They've been the driving force of reducing that. The number that we've already gotten it down to in a year and a half is reduced by over 38%. So, again, great cooperation with the legislature on that, but that's been the Mining, Land, and Water group that has been really, really focused on that. Oil and gas is probably not much of a stranger to many of you. That's a critical division in DNR. Again, a lot of activity in this past year. One thing that I do want to compliment Bill Barron, the director. We've been really, really utilizing our abilities with regard to leases and unit applications to get companies to drill more. And we've been using that leverage quite effectively, forcefully, and I think you're going to see in some of these slides that it's producing some results, positive results. Parks and outdoor recreation, again, we have obviously the largest park system in the country by far. I'm told we have certain state parks that are larger than Rhode Island. I'll check on that. Woodtick-Chick, I think, might be larger than Rhode Island. But you'll see there one highlight with regard to parks is two national awards this past year for boating safety and conservation that we think were important to highlight. Support services. We have a great support service staff. Keeps everything running efficiently. Gene Davis does a fantastic job there. And this is the Gas Pipeline Project Office. This is the office that coordinates with regard to the producers and the licensee on the large diameter pipeline. Very, very close cooperation, really integrated closely with AGDC, which is also really important. So that's been a, and you see a number of important milestones that I'll get into a little bit more in the presentation. And then finally, the State Pipeline Coordinator's Office. That sounds like a technical work, but they have permitting authority over all the pipelines throughout the state. Again, a lot of very busy this past year. I think the Point Thompson right away for the pipeline up there, enormous amount of work and effort that went into that, getting that issued on time. And then OPUMP, our Office of Project Management and Permitting. That is, you know, we raise and we certainly are come clean on our permitting issues and problems. This is one that is does a fantastic job. This is the group that coordinates all for big projects in the state. They coordinate all the permitting statewide. Everybody, all the different state agencies meet there. They have an ombudsman. The Fed agencies typically come to these meetings, and they have also been quite busy. Tom Crawford does a great job there. So that's just a quick overview. I apologize that the whole team's not here, but we will have them here on Monday. And if you have any specific questions, but again, it's more making sure that they're out here meeting the legislators and you guys are seeing who exactly is in charge of these different groups, all of which play an important role in resource development in the state. So, Madam Chair, what I thought I'd do now is kind of the meat of this presentation is to essentially update the committee on what we see as some pretty important. You can't include everything. As you can see from this intro slide, there's actually a lot of material here. But on what we see as some of the important elements for this committee to be aware of, and I apologize specifically to you because I know for a fact that you've seen elements of these slides before, but we think it's important to walk through these, and we'll try to do so rather quickly. So if you look at the first one, it's what we've, I think what everybody in the legislature is focused on. It's what we think is the most critical issue, certainly, with regard to the state's economic future, and that's the issue of the TAPS throughput decline, arresting that, turning that around. I won't go through all the numbers or the bullets there, but everybody can see how that has been declining. But as I mentioned, and we'd love to bring the team in here, we certainly don't think that the future needs to be prologue, where that's our destiny. It doesn't have to be. We certainly have the geology to turn that around. And there's been a lot of talk in this building about giveaways. The ultimate giveaway from our perspective is the yearly decline, right? So we lose revenues, economic opportunity for the people of Alaska every single year. It's gone, vanished because of that decline. And that's what we need to focus on, turning that around. So we're not having giveaways that future generations are losing. So what we've been focused on with regard to addressing the TAPS throughput issue, the governor put out a very ambitious, we know it's ambitious, goal of 1 million barrels a day. And we have launched this strategy almost about a year and a half ago to focus on turning the TAPS throughput issue around. And as you can see, it's a four-part strategy. The most important is making Alaska more competitive, and there's a number of ways to do it. We think tax reform is the cornerstone to that critical element of the strategy. But there's other aspects of this, and what I want to do is just touch on these. Permitting, right? That's another thing, whether it's state, whether it's borough, whether it's fed. One of the positive things I wanted to report to this committee in the past year, through the permitting process, because there's been a lot of exploration activity up on the North Slope, we have established a very strong, tight relationship with the North Slope Borough. So we signed an MOU with them. We do information exchange. Our staffs meet monthly. My office and I meet with the mayor quarterly. And that has been really, really important in terms of permitting coordination, because they play a very important permitting role up on the North Slope as well. So that's one of the many elements on the permitting process I'm going to touch on. As we said, facilitating and incentivizing what we call the next phases of North Slope development. So there's enormous opportunities, certainly in the large fields still, but also in smaller fields, also in the OCS, also shale and other unconventional heavy viscous oil. And we have been trying to focus and look at ways to develop all of these. And then finally, you look at that last part. And this is something, I think it's in your materials, but we have, whether it's minerals, whether it's LNG, whether it's oil, we have really tried to put the pedal to the metal in close cooperation with the Department of Commerce on promoting Alaska. And that's everything from big conferences, meetings. We've cold called CEOs of big companies or small companies or medium-sized companies that we think would fit well in Alaska. We go down, we pitch them. And we have been doing that. We've been doing that not only with companies, but with investors. And we have seen some positive aspects to that. We're going to continue to do that. The legislature funded a small amount of money for us to continue to do that. But we've seen that, and we think that that's something you'll see as a theme throughout here. But we think that there's been some positive results from that already. And as you know, this is a very long-term business, so we go back to these companies, some that are interested, who've shown interest. And when they show interest, we send our whole, our top geologists to go brief them, right? So there's been something that we think makes a lot of sense, both from an investment perspective and possible customer perspective. So just a highlight on what we see is, as I mentioned, some positive aspects of what are happening. You look here, both with regard to Cook Inlet and the North Slope, the last 2 years, I won't go through each of the details, but we've had strong lease sales, quite strong lease sales. And again, part of that has we've been going to companies, pitching them, walking them through the terms of the lease sales, really trying to make this much more transactional in terms of getting people up here. So in 2011, we had probably one of the best lease sales in Cook Inlet ever. And even last 2 years on the North Slope have been quite strong from a historical perspective. This is a busy slide, slide 17, but it just gives a snapshot of the activity on the North Slope in the past year. And again, I won't dwell on that too long because it's so busy, but if you look at the next slide, that gives some of the highlights. What we like about these highlights is that it's what we're focusing on is a diversity of players. So you have everybody from Shell to Exxon, which is now going to be an operator on the North Slope for the first time with the Point Thompson settlement, which we think is critical, to Conoco picking up new exploration acreage, to much smaller players going for much smaller and different plays. You have Great Bear looking at the shale play, and then medium size, Armstrong, Repsol, looking at kind of smaller conventional pools. So we like this kind of diversity. But as I mentioned in that last bullet, while these results are positive, we truly, truly believe that we're just scratching the surface. We should, and we think we can, get a heck of a lot more players up there. And one of the things that we've seen is probably one of the most critical elements of what we're trying to do in this job with regard to what's going on the North Slope is increase competition. Get more players up there, get more investment up there, and get these companies all competing. And that is in the state's interest, and we've had a pretty good year there, but we think we can do a lot better. Similarly, we're going to testify on Monday with regard to the challenges in Cook Inlet. And there are definitely challenges. There's a lot that we need to be thinking through. There's a lot that we're doing. But I also, again, wanted to highlight what we see as, if you look 2 years ago, I think a lot of people would have considered this a dead basin, not much going on. And you have really had, in the last 2 years, quite a renaissance in terms of exploration, in terms of investment, in terms of rigs, in terms of different activity. We're not saying we're out of the woods by any measure, but where we've been focused, and again, some of the biggest players in there, we went down personally and pitched these companies, the CEOs of these companies, showed them the resource base and showed them the lease terms and said, it would be great to have you guys come up here. And some of them have. Some of the most important ones have. So this, again, is another slide, quite busy, but it does give you a sense of what's happening. You may have seen this rather extensive petroleum news article. Even a year ago, this made Wall Street Journal, quite a huge article in the Wall Street Journal on what was kind of, hey, we thought this was a declining basin, a lot of activity. Petroleum News put out a very big article just less than a week ago on some of the new investment, and we're going to be very interested in briefing this committee in a lot more detail come Monday. So that's kind of with regard to the oil and gas North Slope Cook Inlet, and what we wanted to do next was give an update again with regard to what's happened with regard to commercializing North Slope gas.
Excuse me, Commissioner, could you pause for 1 second? I just want the record to reflect that we've been joined by Senator Huggins. Senator Huggins, if you'd like to join us up here at the table. All right. Thanks, Commissioner. Go ahead.
Sure. So I think, this is obviously a many ways a 40-year quest with regard to what the state's trying to do. The governor highlighted some of what we see as important work that occurred over the last year. But I think it's important to put it in perspective. A year ago, if you look at where we were a year ago with regard to commercializing North Slope gas, the major producers weren't working together at all. As a matter of fact, Exxon and TransCanada were still officially looking at the lower 48 market despite the rising opportunities in Asia. Conoco and BP had just folded Denali. None of these companies were working together. The Point Thompson development wasn't even moving. And very importantly, where the action was in Asia, nobody was talking about Alaska. We were not on the map in the most dynamic, important market in the world. And what has happened, if you fast forward a year, and I think a lot of it was laid out by the governor a year ago in his State of the State. He put out benchmarks with regard to a roadmap to a gas line, recognizing, look, this is not going to be a light switch and it all happens. You need to make incremental progress, but important progress. I won't go through each one of those, but he put out very ambitious benchmarks. I remember a couple folks after the State of the State last year said, hey, great speech by the governor, but good luck on some of those benchmarks. You know, some of those have never been met ever. And you're going to do those in the next 3 to 9 months. And what ended up happening is that we did meet those benchmarks, we and the companies. We still have a long way to go, as he said, in the State of the State. But what I wanted to do is just briefly touch on some of these benchmarks because I think it's important. I think it's important for this committee to understand what some of these are. The first one is the issue of alignment. Again, the companies weren't working together at all. Does that make it impossible to have a gas line? No, it doesn't make it impossible, but it certainly makes it more challenging. And they weren't focused on an LNG project at all. They came up here at the governor's behest in January, the three CEOs, the Conoco, Exxon, and BP, had never been up here together to meet with a governor in the history of the state. And what came out of that meeting and subsequent meetings was this letter at the end of the first quarter that they're working together on alignment. And as you know, that's not always easy. These companies compete all over the world. And sometimes they compete really hard. And to get the three CEOs to sign a letter, we were joking about, wonder how long it took to negotiate where the different signature blocks were going to be on that letter. But we think that was an important milestone. It happened at the end of March. And what also happened at the end of the March was the settlement at Point Thompson. There's a map of Point Thompson, and I think it's an important map to demonstrate when you look at the North Slope right now, the infrastructure on the eastern part of the North Slope ends at Badami. Despite the fact that we know that the eastern part of the North Slope, there you see Point Thompson in the map, that's the green right at the end there, that's Anwar. So we know that that is highly, highly prolific oil and gas areas for the state of Alaska, and yet we've never had one molecule of oil or gas come out of that part of the state. That's going to change because one of the other benchmarks was to settle Point Thompson in the state's interest, and we think we did. Joe Balash here played a very, very critical role. We think this is a strategic settlement for three principal reasons. It opens up the eastern North Slope. So what you will have now, part of the initial development, where the red area there on the map, you will have a 70,000 barrel a day pipeline, liquids pipeline that goes into TAPS. That is a common carrier pipeline that will enable smaller explorers who can explore in that part to plug into that pipeline. We think it's very important in terms of the TAPS throughput issue and bringing infrastructure to that remote part of the state. Secondly, it's important from the perspective. Important from the perspective of gas commercialization. The project that's going on up there now, multi-billion dollar development, most of that infrastructure can be used for the gas. It's going to be a gas reinjection project. And we think that that's also critical. And the third reason it's strategic is jobs. The employment, and we can provide a more detailed briefing to this committee. But the sustained jobs during the construction phase are supposed to be estimated at 600, 700, 800 jobs in the state, peaking at over 2,000. And those are good jobs. There's contractors and subcontractors all through the state. The vertical support members of the pipeline are already in Fairbanks being fabricated right now. There is a lot of work and activity and jobs going on through the state because of that settlement. So if you look here, what we did in the past, since the settlement, we had three phases of activity with regard to the Point Thompson. First was essentially explaining it to the legislature. Senate Resources held some additional hearings where we had people who were critical, and that's fine. We knew that there would be some people who were critical. There's been one lawsuit, although it doesn't look like it's going anywhere, why anyone would sue to shut down a multi-billion dollar project employing hundreds of Alaskans is beyond me, but someone's still trying to do that. And then we focused on the permitting, state, federal, borough permitting, which was really a daily work with the feds. The new colonel in charge of the Corps of Engineers, Colonel Stokey, someone really, really good to work with, very important. And then getting to work, the ice roads and everything that we've approved are all starting to happen, and so that's an activity that we think's quite important from the state's perspective, and the governor highlighted that in the state of the state. This gives you just a little.
Excuse me, Commissioner. Oh. Senator Bishop, did you have a question?
I do.
Would you like to ask it now?
Yes, I would. Thank you, Madam Chairman. Commissioner Sullivan, I just want to compliment
you and your staff for that agreement settlement. And I'm happy to report that there are two Alaskan contractors, prime contractors, low bidder, working on that project with excellent over 90% Alaska hire record. So thank you. And also, they're taking using goods and services very serious in-state. Exxon is making sure that anything that can be bought and manufactured in Alaska is being done. So I'd just like the record to reflect that. Thank you for your hard work.
Madam Chair, I'll return the compliment because I'll give you a little insight. The settlement has a strong Alaska hire provision in it.
Excellent.
And there was a certain commissioner in charge of labor at the time who was sending me emails saying, you better make sure this is a strong Alaska hire provision. I was like, yeah, roger that, I will. So if there's strong Alaska hire, in some ways it's in large part due to one of your colleagues on this committee. So it was, but it's a strong provision.
Great, thank you.
I'm glad to hear you see them following through on it. So one of the things that with these so the initial benchmarks that the governor laid out in the first quarter, they're met. One of the things that it's always, we think, important for the committee to see, these moves by these companies, these made huge press, international press, front page press throughout the country, and these are just a few examples. We like to highlight that because, you know, sometimes it's important to hear what the people in the country or in Europe or in Asia are reading about what's happening. And it's positive. This is positive news, and it gets more people interested in Alaska. And again, on these benchmarks, we saw continued positive press throughout the year. Again, not saying we're there. We're not saying it's absolutely a done deal, but progress is important, and it's important for Alaskans to see what that progress is.
Sure. Commissioner, excuse me. I believe Senator Dyson has a question.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I have to compliment you all and your predecessors for getting hard-nosed on Point Thompson, probably long overdue. When the pipeline is completed across to the west, do you anticipate that the CO2 stripped out of that gas will be used for lifting heavy oil? And if so, do you think there's any scenario where we get credit for that sequestration of carbon from the feds?
So, through the chair, Senator Dyson, I think, you know, one of the things that I think is going to be important, and the governor laid it out in his State of the State, this State of the State, just a couple days ago, is to get more of the, to finalize the concept selection here in the next month on this project. So we've made progress, but we need to accelerate that and push it. I mention that because in some of the briefings that we've had, obviously that's something that the companies are certainly looking at, and the potential for that kind of symbiotic would be kind of a double positive development if in stripping out CO2 from the gas in a gas treatment facility, assuming that's on the North Slope, in injecting that, what impact that could have in terms of other elements of development on the North Slope, including, you know, enhanced oil recovery or heavy oil or things like that. And so it's clearly something they're looking at, and I think the question would be best answered by the experts who are focused on that. Hopefully, in a month, we're going to hear more about the specifics, and maybe that kind of detail will come out. I'm not sure. But it's a great question.
And federal credits for the sequestration?
Well, I haven't even thought about that. Maybe.
The irony does not escape you.
Well, no, I mean, it doesn't escape me at all, but I think it's a great idea, too, right? But so we'll ask them about that next time. I just don't know who the credits would go to.
Thank you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So the other thing that the governor asked last year, he talked about hardening the numbers on a project. Again, this was by the third quarter. Again, the company hardening the numbers, putting out an associated timeline. The companies came back with a letter to the governor. Again, I know some of you have seen this, but Again, I want to really compliment the governor because these are what we kind of call action-forcing events, right? These things just don't happen. These were timelines. The companies worked hard to meet these timelines, and we think it produced a lot of activity. These third-quarter announcements, again, in Alaska, we think that's fine. We think it's natural. A lot of press, a lot of skepticism. Other international papers were, when they saw the size of this, I like this Globe and Mail one from Toronto because we're going to get into the competition, but you can see there was a little bit of, oh, no, this Alaska behemoth might be for real finally, and that could spell trouble for Western Canada development projects, which, to be honest, that's exactly what we hope it does. But that's an article that gives you a sense of what some of the press in other countries and in the lower 48, that was a front-page Wall Street Journal article. But that letter, the more important aspect of that letter had the attachments. And just to give you a quick highlight of some of these, this first one shows the integrated team, BP, Conoco, Exxon, TransCanada. Again, I get asked this frequently, hey, is this a ploy? Is this a head fake? You know, 200 people working on this or bringing their expertise? You know, I don't know the answer to that. I think people should ask them directly. They're spending tens of millions of dollars. They have their top engineers. Very, very impressive team. And all the briefings we've gotten, they're working very well together. So just bringing the cultures of these companies together in 6 months, probably not an easy task. This slide gave some kind of the overview specs. Again, the governor in his State of the State said, okay, that's good, but I need the real concept selection details. So this was important to see. Again, one of the elements of this, it just gives Alaskans a sense of the scope and the size. This would be, according to these specs, one of the probably top three LNG projects in the world with our resource base backing it up. And then this final slide, and this you could spend all day on, but this is the stage-gated approach on the different elements of what has to happen to move this forward. And without going into too much detail, because it's quite a busy slide, I can assure you, Madam Chair, that one of the things we've been trying to do all summer, fall, and even now is accelerate this timeline. And when you're meeting with these companies, we would encourage you to send the same message, because we think it's critical to move that timeline along quickly. You had you know, the head of the Conoco in Alaska recently in a speech talk about a potential sanction decision, you know, as early as sometime in 2015. You know, that's aggressive. We like to hear that. That's in a couple years, and that's after spending. If you look, as they go through each additional gate, each time they move through a gate and a decision, hundreds of millions to billions, and the more they're spending, the more likely we think this is going to go. So that's important, and so that's an update. We also had very good progress with AGDC in the past year. What's really important, the governor touched on this in the State of the State, the progress has been complementary. This has been very focused on commercial upstream, the technical engineering of the project. The AGDC progress in the past year has been focused principally on regulatory issues. And as you can imagine, you look at that chart below, having a big project like this come together needs all of those, commercial upstream, technical engineering, regulatory and permitting. So in some ways, there's parallel paths, but they're not duplicating right now, and that's important. So there's been progress on that front as well.
Yep. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I understand that finally it's going to go when you get long-term contracts, the downstream. And we've heard that a couple of Asian coalitions of utilities have been in town and that they are evaluating our situation and others. A friend of mine, maybe yours, said you'll know it's going to happen when there's 747s with Asian marks on the tail unloading Connexes full of money.
We haven't seen it yet, just for the record.
Yeah, but indeed, can you comment? I understand there's some confidentiality there.
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, actually the very next part of the presentation is going to go into all that. So,
forgive me.
Excuse me, Commissioner. I believe Senator Bishop had a question as well.
Just One, Commissioner, so this work that's happening right now, that's outside of GEA, so that's not reimbursable. They're doing this on their dime, is that right?
So, Madam, through the chair, Senator Bishop, let me just show you a slide here. So, if you look here on this integrated team, the only work that would be that qualifies for any GEA reimbursement is the midstream element of this. That's the work being done by TransCanada and Exxon. So, if you look at this, the slide that shows the technical team lead, that's Exxon. BP has been doing all the upstream work. Conoco, with good reason, is doing all the downstream liquefaction work. The TransCanada Exxon APP team, Alaska Pipeline Project, has been doing the midstream work, and that, when we see the bills, that would be reimbursable. Nothing else would.
Thank you. Any other questions, committee members? All right, go ahead.
So one of the things, and the governor talked about it in this State of the State the other day, it wasn't in his State of the State last year, but it's another element. It goes to Senator Dyson's question. The other reason why we think we've seen some progress in the past year is the state really undertook, kind of put into high gear in 2012, what we consider a very aggressive program to get out, not wait for the producers, and aggressively market the comparative advantages of Alaska gas, Alaska LNG, to some of the highest level Chinese government officials, Korean government officials, Japanese government officials, Japanese utilities, Korean utilities. We were flooding the zone in Asia to do what we think we refer to as demand pull, right? You get enough consumers excited about a project and recognizing the comparative advantages of our project over others, and they can help with regard to accelerating the timeline, and they can even help possibly with financing and upstream investing. And so this was something that the governor was in Korea and Japan, and we certainly consider ourselves being back on the map. We are viewed now as a serious player in terms of what is a fierce global competition, but as I mentioned a year ago, we weren't. We are now, in part because what we were doing, in addition to describing some of the progress both with the APP and AGDC, one of the things that we do in these presentations is say, hey, we have two efforts. The state is that focused and serious. But very importantly, we've laid out, and I'll go through these slides quickly, but we've laid out what we see as the strong comparative advantages of Alaska over other projects. And to be honest, we were kind of pretty aggressive in trying to highlight what we think are benefits relative to our competitors. And that was something we did, and I'll get to it, but we think it's starting to bear fruit.
Very good. Commissioner, Senator Machiki has a question.
Commissioner Sullivan, I noticed one of your bullet points is the fact that lower 48 exports is controversial. And I'm aware of federal legislation with an effort to block exports from the lower 48. Has your department been active with our representatives in D.C. to ensure that Alaskan exports are secured for the future?
So, through the chair, Senator Machiki, yes, we have been. I had meetings, very senior DOE meetings, Deputy Secretary, Deputy Assistant Secretary in charge of exports at Department of Energy, which is the one doing this analysis and will grant or not grant these export licenses. We had meetings with the White House. We had meetings with the National Security Council staff, Deputy Secretary and senior officials from the Department of Interior. And our message essentially was, look, you're looking at this lower 48 issue. It is controversial, let's face it. The big reason it's controversial is because the concern down there is if you have gas that's being produced, say, in Ohio, and all of a sudden you have a big export of gas from Ohio that goes to Asia, you potentially limit supplies of gas and potentially increase the price. And as you probably know, there's a huge industrial renaissance going on in the Midwest because of the large amounts of gas. Chemical plants are coming back to places like Pennsylvania and Ohio. Steel mills are coming online. So people are concerned that if you export a lot, you could hurt that. And so there's a big debate. It's very, we've kept very close tabs on it. But our argument has been, A, we're not part of that. We shouldn't be considered part of that. As a matter of fact, in Alaska, it would have the opposite effect. A big export project would increase volumes to Alaskans and maybe Hawaiians, increase volumes to our military, and decrease price. So we are the flip side of the very issue you're trying to wrestle with. So don't, if you're going to limit exports, do what you have to do in the lower 48. That's not really our concern, but make sure we're not part of that. And we've had that discussion, and had that discussion with Senator Wyden twice, who's now the chairman of the, well, with you, once in D.C. and once with you at the plant. And thank you, by the way. I think your advocacy on that was very helpful. And even Congressman Markey, who's been one of the most outspoken members trying to limit all exports. So that's a long answer to your question, but we've been very aggressive on that topic to make sure we're not caught up in what could be some export limits. And as a matter of fact, you'll see in these slides, it's one of the things that we're highlighting. So very quickly, just to go through these comparative advantages that we've probably presented, big conferences, smaller conferences, private meetings, but these comparative advantages in the past year have been trotted out to hundreds, if not thousands, of people in Asia. First one is the huge resource base, which speaks for itself, but you know, there's essentially no resource risk. We know how the how much gas, we have enormous amounts of gas. It's conventional, it flows. The second, if you look at slide 33, co-located with existing infrastructure, very limited environmental impact. Third, and I again want to mention Senator Michiki's work on this, but we have highlighted the reliability of Alaska LNG exports, the Conoco plant, as never having missed a shipment, one of probably the most reliable supplier of gas to Asia ever. We've been doing it for that long. So this was a very, very important aspect because some of our competitors, the Russians in particular, don't have such a record of reliability at all. And you can see one of the bullets there. We don't mince words in these meetings. Alaska does not use gas for political purposes. That's directed at Mr. Putin over there in Russia, who certainly does that. Geographic proximity advantages, political legal stability that many places that our competitors don't, even conflict. You know, Qatar is a huge supplier, but obviously 60 miles from Iran. Studies that show cost competitiveness that we've highlighted. I won't go into each of those. Businesses that are already doing, you know, world-class LNG in other places. And this goes to, Senator, your question on export license. We have highlighted that on certain things, we think we're much further along, much less of a political risk than, say, lower 48 LNG. One of our biggest competitors, we clearly feel, is the Western Canada, Kitimat, Prince Rupert projects. So we take we have no problems highlighting their First Nation issues, which are very troubling for them. They haven't even come close to resolving those. With ANCSA, we have resolved those, and we highlight those regulatory differences. And then even we've highlighted and we've shown the White House and the Department of Energy, the National Security Council, this previous presidential finding, that which our lawyers still think is valid, that under the National Gas Act, you have to have a presidential finding to allow large volumes of exports. President Reagan did this right before he left office, and we still think this is valid. So we're showing this as saying, you know, we think that one of the steps that has to go with regard to large volumes of exports, we already have. And even if others don't buy that legally, it's very strong precedent that Alaska LNG would not, large volumes, would not affect domestic prices. And so we think that on the regulatory front, we have a leg up, certainly on other areas, and we've been highlighting those. And we also highlighted the upstream advantages. And then we have not been shy to kind of look at where the competition is and point out what we see are some of the areas where we think the Alaska project has better advantages, if you're particularly if you look at that from the perspective of a buyer. And we've highlighted all these, even, you know, pointing out articles that prospective buyers who are thinking about Australia might want to read before they buy, if you look there on some of the cost overruns in Australia, because there's so much activity. So so the important thing here, I guess, and Senator, goes to your question, is one of the reasons we think that this is starting to people are starting to take notice is that some of the companies that we've been briefing and some of the entities that we have been talking to are now showing up in Alaska with interest. So the most, in many ways, the governor highlighted this in the state of the state, but we had the CEO of Korea Gas, KOGAS, that's the largest purchaser of LNG in the world, and his entire LNG team here in Juneau for 2 days. And we gave him a version of this brief, again, comparative advantages. The governor had met with them in Korea. I had met with the members of the LNG team in Korea as well. We have this company. It's a Japanese consortium, Resources Energy, Inc., Senator, I think you were referring to. Our gas pipeline office signed a cooperation agreement with them. They're looking at, they have a number of potential growing consortium members. They're looking at a study with regard to a liquefaction facility, large scale. We had Mitsui that came to Alaska after our meetings. We had Mitsubishi Heavy Industry that has reached out to us. I had the opportunity to brief at the U.S. Embassy. The embassy hosted us, a big presentation. We had almost 90 people there, and a lot of the entities wanted to do follow-up. So, and in even discussions with Japanese government agencies that help with financing, JBIC is their huge export-import bank. So there's a lot of interest, I can tell this committee, in the past year with regard to Alaska LNG. And I'll give you one additional anecdote. In Tokyo in September, we were invited to this consumer-producer LNG conference. It was the largest one in the world. It had the energy ministers from Qatar, Australia, Canada, Russia, all the top CEOs, all the top buyers, all the government ministry heads from Taiwan, Korea, Japan, China, India, and we got asked to have a speaking role. And we presented this, threw some elbows at some of the competition in front of the 1,000 participants in this conference. And very importantly, when the Japanese officials, the senior Japanese officials who were introducing the entire conference to this meeting of close to 1,000 people, they highlighted, with all these delegations, they initially highlighted the emir and the energy minister from Qatar. Qatar is the largest LNG producer in the world. After the Fukushima disaster in Tokyo, the Qataris supplied Japan with a lot of gas when they needed it, when they were shutting down all their nuclear facilities. So the Japanese senior officials acknowledged the Qataris' presence, thanked them for helping them after Fukushima. And then the only other delegation that they acknowledged was the delegation from Alaska. And they said Alaska has been our longest, most reliable partner supplying us LNG. They were the pioneers. We look forward to the next phase of their developments, and we're very happy that the Alaskans are here.
So I think we're back on the map, and that's a good indication, and that's what the governor was referring to in his state of the state. So, and then finally, you know, one of the things just on gas is the other thing that we're trying to do is we're trying to put together the pieces. If you look at the history, one of the problems always that's bedeviled our efforts is stakeholder alignment. You have a lot of stakeholders. Obviously, Alaskans are the most important, but you have the market, you have customers, you have the producers, and the more we can align all of that and have pieces of that puzzle put together and reaching out to them and working that, I think the better our chances are. And I think in the past year we've worked those different elements. We're starting to get alignment, but you never know when that's going to fall, and I think that's why the governor's been so focused also on strengthening AGDC to make sure if the alignment does not come together, that we have our ability to kind of move forward with a state effort. And so we think that we're pretty well positioned right now, and we're going to keep pressing it. So I know that's a lot, but we think a lot happened on gas in the past year, and we wanted this committee to be aware.
Excuse me, Commissioner. Yes, Senator Bishop.
I can't help myself.
Go for it.
Labor guy, but Commissioner Sullivan, I just got to come back to the skyrocketing labor cost.
Yeah.
Project labor agreement. I'll make sure you don't get there. Them Australians probably wish they'd have had one by now.
Well, through the chair, Senator Bishop, as you know, that's right now a big problem there. I mean, there was a Wall Street Journal article, several months ago about a front page. You probably read it. It was about a truck driver at one of these facilities making close to $300,000 a year or something like that because the labor costs are just through the roof, and it's having an impact on these projects. They have a lot of projects, though. I mean, they are building and investing billions, multiple billions. They're going to probably overtake Qatar in the next 10 years as the largest LNG exporter in the world.
But we got to be competitive.
Well, that's the point. I mean, if you look at these slides here, this is, you know, I've heard this statement before, but I think it's the time we got to stop fighting over a pipeline, starting and fighting for a pipeline, because this is who we're fighting against, in my view. And this is pretty fierce competition. But we have comparative advantages that suit us pretty well. So switching gears, and I know this was an earlier question, but we also had what we think, and it's kind of quiet, it doesn't get a lot of press, but another positive year with regard to strategic and critical minerals. In 2011, the governor launched this strategy here, some ways similar to the oil strategy with some differences. You'll see some similarities, permitting, getting the word out globally on our resource base, focusing on the strategic importance of rare earth elements. But it's always important, we think, to just show what kind of the value has been from the seven producing mines. A lot of people, I think, are surprised by that number. It's actually not what most people think. You know, states like Utah or Nevada or Arizona or dozens, right? We have seven, and they provide a lot of value, certainly from an export perspective, as you can see here. But one of the things that we always like to highlight is just how job-intensive these places are. So I had the opportunity a couple of years ago to visit Fort Knox. I think the numbers, Senator Bishop, you probably know much better than I do, about 700-800 employees make the average wage in the mining industry is $100,000 average wage. So as you can see, that's an enormous impact. And the other, what we think is good news is not just, it's what we think might be coming online with regard to potential future activity because of all the exploration investment. So for the second year in a row, one-third of U.S. investment in the strategic and critical minerals area was in Alaska. See that number on the left side of the screen. And it's not just the it's not just Pebble, the huge ones. You see that bullet second from the bottom, 30 different exploration projects spent over $1 million in 2011. That's the latest number we have. And as you know, that's also a big job creator in the summer with different services.
Senator Bishop?
Madam Chairman, Dan, just as I'm trying to help you with the sales pitch to the world, and you're doing a great job, but recently Barrick Gold in Nevada is switching all to gas for their surface fleet, lowering operating costs by 60%. Think what that would do for these Alaska projects that are marginal. We had fuel gas for gas for this equipment.
Well, Matt, through the chair, Senator Bishop, is you probably one of the positive things that's not directly stated here, but Donlin did move into permitting, right? So a lot of people think, you know, there's a lot of talk about Pebble, of course, it's controversial throughout the state, a lot of advocacy on both sides. But Pebble has not moved into the permitting stage yet. They have not come to the feds, that would be the Corps. They've not come to DNR to go through the permitting. That has not happened yet. So that's one thing we remind people, that step hasn't happened. It did happen this fall with Donlin. Their board of directors made that decision. They're starting going through the permitting. And they do have in their current plan of development a pipeline for gas from Cook Inlet out to that development. So kind of, Senator Bishop, it kind of goes to what you were talking about with regard to the potential for gas. And then related to this, we've been 2 years in a row now in Fairbanks. We're going to make this an annual. In 2011, we launched our Strategic and Critical Minerals Summit. These have been real great events. I know some of you have attended. We've had sold-out crowds 2 years in a row now. It's 30 below zero in Fairbanks. We had people from all over the country, even some people from Asia showing up. So you know something's going on if they're showing up at 30 below. And selling out the Princess Hotel. What we did, the governor announced our strategy last year, gave an update on the statewide assessment. This year was a lot more focused on really trying to help motivate deal-making. We had some of Alaska's best companies, a lot of the regional corporations, investment banks, the university. You take a quick look at the agenda there. But we did actually this year have a great legislative turnout. So we appreciated all the legislators who came. And Commissioner Bishop, I know we had breakfast with the JOGMEC Japanese officials who came and spoke. That's when we were talking about what JOGMEC is, I said it's kind of like ADA with a $45 billion balance sheet. So. It was good having those guys there, and they gave a great speech, very bullish on Alaska. Our latest mine, Pogo Mine, the gold mine, they helped fund that, so they're pretty interested in Alaska. We were trying to get JOGMEC to open an office in Fairbanks, but I don't think we succeeded, but maybe we'll get there. So positive news on that. And then this is something I'll walk through rather quickly, but because, you know, it sounds – kind of boring, but it's very important. The governor put forward more legislation today on our statewide permitting reform. This is, again, where we've had really, really strong support from the legislature. And it started by us recognizing the fact when we took over that we had a problem, a big problem, huge backlog of permits, 2,500 backlog permits, which we saw as kind of strangling the private sector. And we've been focused on eliminating that backlog while making the system more efficient and coming to the legislature with ideas for streamlining and making our permitting system more timely, efficient, and certain. So we got the HB 361 last year through with strong bipartisan support. And, again, as I mentioned, the governor has put forward a bill today, and there's a lot in there, and we'll be excited to advocate for that in front of this committee. Finally, I just want to mention wherever a theme of this is we've been out, we've been promoting the state, we've been trying to get investors here, we've been trying to get buyers. We think we've made progress on that. We always, whenever we do these pitches, whether it's in front of a group at the embassy or in private meetings, we do highlight, promote, and
talk about our very high environmental standards. We know that that does add costs, but we essentially tell people, look, this is incredibly important to us. We think we have some of the highest standards in the world. We have a great record with some important, you know, occasional, the Exxon Valdez obviously being one of the huge, very tragic mishaps, but by and large, a very strong record of developing our resources and protecting the environment. And we frankly tell investors, if you want to come to Alaska, you got to abide by those, and if you're not committed to that, we don't want your money. And then we're also we also talk about our role as kind of an innovator in a lot of different areas because of our high standards with regard to technological innovations that have occurred in horizontal drilling and the limited impact of oil development in many ways was pioneered in Alaska. And this just gives you an example of how far we've come in large part because of our standards. So just moving forward, finally, very quickly, I know we're going to be in front of the committee probably a lot on some of these issues, but looking at the legislative session moving forward, the governor's put out the tax reform bill, core principles. We have a comprehensive plan, but tax reform is critical to that. And, you know, the International Energy Agency and the kind of top energy security think tank in the world has predicted by 2020 the U.S. will be the number one producer of oil and the number one producer of gas in the world, more than Saudi Arabia, more than Russia. And we need to be leading that, not being an anchor, dragging that down. And we think we have the geology to do it. And as the governor noted in his press remarks the other day, those who are favoring the status quo without a plan, declinists, that's not acceptable. It's not fair. And we need to move forward with a plan. We're implementing a large part of the plan, but the tax reform component is going to be critical. He mentioned the commercialization in the state of the state, set new benchmarks. We think those are important. I've already talked about how important it is with regard to the global competition, permitting reform. And then, as I mentioned, we're going to continue to promote the state. We'll have a speaking role at NAEP this year in February, which we've been trying to do for a while. The roundup with regard to minerals. You have in your materials there something we worked on for several weeks. We had a reporter with Oil and Gas Magazine, one of the biggest magazines in the world, that they say over 30,000 CEOs read that. And in the December magazine, you had that large feature on Alaska that we think is kind of the good promotion that we need. So we're going to continue to do that, and we've gone on pretty long, but there's a lot to report on. We, as I mentioned, the optimism's high, but we have a lot more work to do, and we're very excited to work with the legislature on a lot of these issues.
Great presentation. Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Dyson has a question, I believe.
Thank you, and thank you for the presentation. I think we're all impressed with what you guys have done and are doing. And I'm also intimidated by the fact that every question I've asked, you'll say, we're going to get to it.
Well, I think we're done.
I know you are. And I'm only slightly disappointed. There's three things I hope you will cover. You can either do it offline or not. We have the potential in Cook Inlet that the producers, the real incentive is to them not push on gas development and sell oil, you know, just because of the delta and the prices and the and what's going on there. And I hear things offline that are disturbing, but and as you know, with ELF in place, there's virtually no production tax on oil there, and we've done lots of things on the gas side. But if you all have some insight that would help us understand that, that would be the AOGCC tells me that it's been 15 or 20 years since they have been asked to look at the North Slope Reservoir gas offtake rate that would not sacrifice oil production, and at what point can we start taking off gas there. without damaging their oil recovery and still be in the producer's financial interest. And it seems to me that's very valuable information for you all and for us to have. I've asked them if there's a mechanism of which the legislature can ask them to revisit that issue, you know, and they've got a lot of expertise there. Anyways, I think you and we need to know, when can we start taking gas off at what rate without affecting oil production? And then lastly, as you and I have talked about in years past, should we, without diluting your efforts on oil and gas, be working the Asian Pacific Rim on coal exports from us to that market? As you know and alluded to, we got enough coal to supply North America for 200 years, and very much in demand, I'm told, on the Pacific Rim and so on. And at some point, I would enjoy a bit of a briefing on that.
Sure.
And you didn't touch the gas liquids, but I'll be looking forward to that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Senator Machicki.
Just one to add. Commissioner Sullivan, as you're processing things, we talk about the opportunities for Alaskans, but haven't seen that carried into an exercise of evaluating the potential. Not, we know about the problem for lower cost, reliable energy for Alaskans, not only through Fairbanks, but to Cook Inlet, the most densely populated areas of the state. What we don't talk about a lot, and Senator Bishop touched on it, is the potential for additional industries feeding off that supply. And that's it's difficult to quantify. However, the potential is enormous, and that's not only large-scale mining, but smaller mom-and-pop businesses. I know one contact I had was by someone who wants to create a berry drying business that would employ 100. And you don't dry berries on diesel. You dry it on natural gas. It's the only thing that's economical. So a lot of opportunity. Again, a challenge to quantify, but imperative in justifying the existence of a pipeline moving forward.
Very good. Any other comments from committee members? Great. Well, thank you so much, Commissioner. And we will be having you back. Of course, we'll see you on Monday.
Good. We'll see you Monday. Thank
and
you.
And Tuesday.
Thank you for the time.
Absolutely.
Tuesday, we're going to talk about land issues in state affairs.
So just a reminder to committee members, the meeting will take place on Monday, usual time, 3:30 to 5. We'll be hearing from the rest of Commissioner Sullivan's team. I also want to make note to committee members that Wednesday we will be extending the meeting time to 6 p.m. We've got some bills we're going to hear, as well as continuing to look at natural gas. I want to also raise awareness of committee members that Mining 101 will be offered by the Alaska Miners Association on February 8th here in Juneau. Excuse me, 9th, a Saturday. So encouraging you to attend that. I want to thank Carrie Cooper-Reiter, who was our secretary today. Thank you very much. And with that, the committee meeting will be adjourned. Let the record reflect, it is 4:54 p.m. Thank you.